Nothing says summer like a rich, creamy ice cream float from Skyline. Made with two scoops of fresh vanilla ice cream and your choice of Barq's Root Beer, Barq's Red Cream Soda, or any of their Coke products. At participating Skyline locations while supplies last.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Monday. Welcome back after spring break. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris. Thank you for coming back and joining us. Great to be live with you again.
Yeah, we're so thrilled to be back. So thank you guys for allowing us to spend a little time with the family and just to regroup and much needed time off with the family. Always needed. So thank you guys for being patient. There's a lot of news to get to, though. We're going to talk about this April 2nd. President Trump doubling down on this again today. What is April 2nd? Liberation Day for the United States of America. That's right. Will we see new tariffs? Will we see a removal of the IRS? Will we see $5,000 Doge checks in your bank account? Will we see the external revenue service as well?
We're also going to talk about this leak from The Atlantic, where a reporter says he was copied in on a group chat to bomb Yemen. Have you ever been accidentally included in a group chat to bomb somebody? I have not. Is this a false flag? What are the things that are setting off our spidey sense? We're going to go over that. We're also going to talk about reports that a super cartel is forming. The Mexican drug cartels, who usually hate each other and war to the death, well, they're teaming up and their common enemy is us, the United States. Guess what? They have Israeli spyware. They're going to use it on us. No one saw that coming, that if we, you know, our greatest ally, Israel, might actually use their technology against us. We're going to go through this in detail. It's going to scare you. It's going to want to it's going to inspire you to throw your phone in a lake. I'm going to tell you that right there.
Go back to flip phones, for crying out loud. And in targeting journalists specifically, by the way, a lot of this with, and this is going back many, many years in Mexico, specifically the Mexican cartels using this spyware to spy on journalists and then killing them. So that's how it goes for journalists these days. And then also we're going to talk about the pyramids today on the show. We're going to talk about what is hidden beneath these pyramids. Bombshell story, which I think is arguably one of the biggest stories I've ever heard. When I told my son this story yesterday, he couldn't believe it. He just kept asking me questions about it. Wait a second, you mean to tell me there's a 2-mile deep city underneath the pyramids in Egypt? Like, what the hell is happening? We're going to go over all of that today on the show because we've got new details on these pyramids and actually details that may even go back to the 1950s on what's actually hidden underneath the Great Pyramids. So we're going to talk about all of that on the show today. So
this is Clayton's ball of wax. These are the types of things he researches all the time. Making pyramids with energetic wands and things like this. None of this was a surprise to him. I am very sorry we were off during the week of the JFK assassination files, because that also is Clayton's jam, something he has studied ad nauseum. So we're going to continue to go over that as that unfolds, but it's a busy news Monday. So let's get to the news, shall we?
Yeah, let's get into it. So we should point out, though, that while we were gone, gold just hit $3,000 an ounce, if you can believe that. $3,000 an ounce of gold. We've been talking about this for many, many months, that this was bound to happen. It wasn't our prediction. You know, many gold experts were saying that this was going to happen, which is why we're big believers in investing in gold and silver. And you can too. And our friends at Lear Capital have been a sponsor of our show for many, many years, and they can help you invest in gold. So yeah, over $3,000 an ounce. I mean, unbelievable. And I'm glad we invested, I think, I don't know, back when it was like $1,900 an ounce or something.
$1,700
an ounce. So that, and we were telling you about it back then. Now it's over $3,000 an ounce. And what happens when we go to Fort Knox and how those prices will be adjusted? And President Trump hinting at over $5,000 an ounce for gold. I mean, that's where we're headed. Anyway, go to Lear Redacted right now and start, even if you got like a few dollars in US dollars, where we're headed right now, we could be heading for a massive recession as it relates to the US dollar. Protect your family with precious minerals, okay? I'm telling you, call them. 1-800-613-3557 is the place to go, or go to learredacted.com and just talk to them. Get your free guide and just have a conversation on the phone with them. They're a great patriotic company. and have a conversation with them and see if it's right for you. So our thanks to Lear for supporting the show. Well, just a few hours ago, President Trump posted this on Truth Social, April 2nd, Liberation Day in America, reminding us all that this is coming. So people have been trying to, you know, go through the tea leaves here on exactly what's coming on April 2nd. What is Liberation Day for the United States look like? It's not going to be just one some small announcement. I'm going to go through what sources have been telling us here at Redacted as it relates to the IRS. We'll talk about that here on the show in a second. But here's what Trump said in his own words. April 2nd is Liberation Day for America because we will start taking back some of the vast wealth that has been taken from us due to the many weak, incompetent, perhaps even dishonest politicians who have represented us in the past. So what exactly is coming? And we know tariffs for one thing, right? This is a big piece of it.
But we're talking about politicians. So what the major questions are those American politicians? Because we know that they profit off of investments that they make, and that still is allowed, that Congress is allowed to make investments. Is it people who maybe have dual citizenships, people who have been representing other countries' interests? If we could just look at, can we put that explanation back? Perhaps even dishonest politicians. It's like, maybe we'll get around to that. Those perhaps even like, it's just, it's obviously an unclear statement. So we could read the tea leaves until the cows come home.
I think the biggest thing is going to be the biggest piece of all of this we've heard from President Trump is tariffs, right? 25% tariffs, going to war with China economically. What will this look like for American aluminum, American steel back at home, American manufacturing? That's the biggest piece of it. Here's President Trump in his own words talking about this more deeply. Watch.
Is there going to be a summit in June?
It could be. I mean, I wouldn't mind a summit, but there's going to be something else taking place. It's called April 2nd, and that's going to be tariffs. And China will pay and other countries will pay.
Businesses,
we've been ripped off by every country in the world, friend and foe. And on April 2nd, I call it the liberation of America. We've been the fat, dumb, foolish country that allowed everybody to rip us off, including our friends. Look at NATO. Until I got involved in NATO, we were paying for the whole thing practically.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that could mean, and the timing of it is suspicious because it's just days before April 15th, which is the tax filing day. Many people have already filed their taxes, so that's not going to impact that tax filing day, obviously, or else we're going to give refunds to people who've already done it.
So this is, to me, it's going forward. So this is the IRS. I think there's bubbling rumors right now, and I've heard from sources who specifically told us here at Redacted that something big is about to happen with the IRS. Are we about to see a closure of the IRS? Now, I don't know if it's fully going to be closed or if there a large, massive pieces of it are going to be closed on April 2nd, that this will put the power back in the people, instead of taking tax dollars out of our pockets. This could be an entire shift of people under $150,000 a year who are making $150,000 a year not paying any taxes. Mm-hmm. There's also word, of course, that these Doge checks that President Trump wants to send out of like $5,200 mm-hmm. of Doge money that was taken from the American people would go back to the American people. But also, as we talked about here on the show, the external revenue service,
right,
which is another big piece of this, which we're likely to also be announced. Now, that comes from Howard Lutnick, specifically in the Trump administration, that we'll hear an announcement about the external revenue service. Hard to say it. I'm so used to saying internal.
Yeah.
What would that be, though, the external revenue service?
Well, the idea of that is that goods and services sold are taxed at the sale and the exchange between countries. So if we're buying something from Mexico, say corn or what have you, then that tax is paid then. So the way it works now, obviously, you know this, you pay taxes on the dollars you earn, then you pay taxes when you buy that corn, because there's a tax on top of that, and it's depending on which state you're in. And so we are doubly taxed. This is something he's talked about extensively. So it would be interesting to see, and then the people with Trump derangement syndrome that just hate everything he says, are they really going to defend this system, especially when they're trying so hard right now, Democrats, to frame themselves as the party of the working class, which is a lull That's laughable, right? They've done nothing for the working class except patronize to them and make their life worse and more dangerous. And so how is this going to work? Is this something we can unite around? Is fiscal responsibility? You know, that's a joke, too.
Right.
That's a funny joke.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says, you know, talked about April 2nd as well and what's coming. Watch.
On April 2nd, we're going to produce a list of other countries' tariffs, and we are going to go to them and say, look, here's where we think the tariff levels are, non-tariff barriers, currency manipulation, unfair funding, labor suppression, and if you will stop this, we will not put up the tariff wall. If you do, then we will put up the tariff wall to protect our economy, protect our workers, and protect our industries.
Right. So get your guesses in. What does this mean? Is this something that will actually serve the American people? Well, here's something that didn't serve the American people is bombing Yemen. Why did we have to do this? Why did we do this? Well, Jeffrey Goldberg over at The Atlantic says that he was led in on a group chat that was planning the bombing of Yemen just last week. He was accidentally added to a signal group and he thought, that's kind of weird, but he lurked instead and kind of watched what was happening. He says the person who did this was Tim Walz from the, Walz, say his name. I can't find it here. I will find it for you. From the Trump administration. And he watched as Trump senior officials, cabinet members, continued to debate whether they should do this, how they would do it, and when they should do it. And it shows us that there is, in fact, dissent inside the Trump administration. Now, Michael Walz. It's a strange story. And taken at face value, it would indeed tell us, okay, well, some inside the Trump administration did want to bomb Yemen for this shipping route that the Houthis had blocked in the wake of October 7th. And some did not, particularly the J.D. Vance camp. It said, I don't think we really need to do this. There's a lot of nuggets in here, but it's also would be illegal because, one, Walz himself had set messages to disappear, which is against the law. Two, it could be a setup for various reasons, such as the part in here, and you should read for yourself. Do we have screens of it? Shall we put it up?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So here, this is from The Atlantic, where he writes, Jeffrey Goldberg says, the world found out shortly before 2 p.m. Eastern time on March 15th that the United States was bombing Houthi targets across Yemen. I, however, knew 2 hours before the first bombs exploded that the attack might be coming. The reason I knew this is that Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, had texted me the war plan at 11:44 a.m. The plan included precise information about weapons, packages, targets, and timing. This is going to require some explaining. So it's interesting that he says Pete Hegseth sent it to him because we know Mike Walz, who's a neocon, who, if anyone should be fired, I'm hoping it's Mike Walz because he is the one who's been really kind of driving us towards war with Iran. He is the one who wants war with Iran. So he is a neocon inside the Trump administration. I would love for Mike Walz to be the one that gets fired here. But anyway, why is he saying, Pete Hegseth texted him the war plans from the signal group?
Well, he was lurking in the signal group and he saw these texts such as this from J.D. Vance, who had previously said, I'm not sure we should do this. I'm not sure POTUS understands the implication. But if you think we should do it, just do it. But then we're going to have to bail Europe out again. And let's make sure our message is tight here. To which Pete Hegseth says, yes, I fully share your loathing of European freeloading. It's pathetic, but we're the only ones who can do this. To which later another administration official says POTUS wants to do it. It's a green light. So we're going to do it. And then some planning of it. Now, what's kind of weird is that this planning that goes on, battleship type bomb X5 right now at this time with these bombs, why would that happen in a signal chat when none of the recipients on this chat have access to that? Why would they have to know that? You would think that you'd need to tell the bombers, but do you need to loop in Marco Rubio on the exact military strategy right? I'm not using the right words, but you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Well, also, I mean, and we heard from John Kiriakou, who was a former CIA, agent, and said that this leak is a violation of the Espionage Act. At least according to the judge in my case, Judge Leonard Brinkmia, a Clinton appointee, said that providing national defense information to any person not entitled to receive it is worthy of 10 years in prison, accidental or no accident. It's beyond time to rewrite the outdated and politicized 1917 Espionage Act. So that's pretty crazy.
Right.
Why are they using Signal to communicate?
Right. Signal, the reporter points out clearly, is not an ordained messaging platform. It's not used inside of any kind of war room. It's not, you know, it's not archived. So why would they be doing that and then not be careful with who's on the group chat? Now, all of us have copied in the wrong person on group chats. I mean, raise your hand if you haven't, right? But this feels very purposeful. And Brian Hughes, a spokesperson for the National Security Council, has said that it appears to be an authentic message chain, and they are reviewing how that happened. But again, the fact that it's not an ordained communication platform, that Walz had set some of his messages to disappear after 1 week or 4 weeks, raises questions about whether you're violating the federal records laws. And again, is there a message here that they want other countries to hear, such as the European Union? And I mean, I don't know. Have we not been clear about our sort of disdain for the freeloading of European nations?
Yes.
Did we need to leak this in another way? What would be the advantage of doing it this way?
The only thing I can think of is if they're trying to torpedo one of these people. So are they trying to torpedo Hegseth? Are they trying to torpedo Mike Waltz?
Right.
But again, Mike Waltz apparently is the one that added Jeffrey Goldberg to the chat from the Atlantic. So it'd be great if Mike Waltz is the one that actually gets pushed out. But,
someone would have done that from his phone and then he gets in trouble. Like, I don't know how that happened.
I don't know. It's hard to say. But again, it seems like all of the strategy right now is pushing this towards Hegseth. Like they're trying to get Hegseth fired.
You think?
It seems that way. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It just seems crazy to me that the journalist would like hang out in there. Like if I accidentally got added to a group chat and I realized it was like the vice president, the secretary of defense, I'm like, I'm out of here before I see anything at all.
Yeah. Or, well, Jeffrey Goldberg is really a sleazy guy. So like, let's be honest here. Okay.
Oh, what I would do is I would say, this is Natalie Morris from Redacted. Am I supposed to be here? And I would screenshot that and I would save it because I would not want to be framed for anything.
Yeah.
And I would make damn sure that everybody acknowledged my presence. There's no way I would lurk. Yeah.
I know you guys are sharing some war strategy here. just want to let you know, this is Clayton from Redacted. You guys added me to this group chat. Like, I see that you're planning this war in Yemen and making these bombing runs. Am I supposed
you
to be
sure you also, want me here?
Sure you want me to be here?
I don't
here?
Know if you guys are familiar with, like, Telegram and those channels, but what they do is it'll actually show that you've read the message. Like, it shows who's seen it. So they know that you're seeing that information.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know how this happened, but apparently there are 18 other people on this whole chat. So
now another piece of this is, again, the part that J.D. Vance is pushing back. He doesn't seem to want to escalate war in the Middle East. And he and his spokespeople had to say, well, we're on board with whatever POTUS wants. If POTUS greenlit this, we are the company guy. We're all good with it. So even though the chat does seem to indicate that there's hesitation about escalating, and that is what we would know, that's what we've seemed to be reading from other sources, is that the vice president and the president absolutely do not want to escalate in the Middle East. And that seems to be what Steve Witkoff, their Middle East envoy, is saying as well. So are they setting up who is for and who is against it? Because that also makes this quite clear.
Yeah, they're trying to call people out publicly about this, like going to war with Iran. Like here's who's on board and here who's not. And we know that Mike Waltz is fully on board with this. So get these neocons out of there. But it'll be interesting to see.
Is probably the worst in terms of looping in the wrong person.
Yeah.
Last week, I accidentally texted in Portuguese from my watch to Clayton's mom. That's not the same.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling better about that mistake.
Sting Fury says, hey, are you guys are promoting lies? No, this has been widely reported. In fact, the White House confirmed this. So this is now confirmed by the White House that, yes, these text messages did leak out. And it was first reported in The Atlantic, which I wouldn't normally trust The Atlantic at all. But the White House did confirm it. So yeah.
We're reporting the reporting and trying to parse out why.
Yeah.
So we've not reported any lie. So kiss my butt.
No, there's people that, you know, whatever. People want to know where we were last week. It was spring break, so we were off with the kids. We took a week off with the kids. But yeah, the Thursday before that, we should mention that our son, yeah, he got really sick. We had to rush him to the hospital, so we had to cancel Thursday's show. It happened unexpectedly. So thank you for all of your thoughts and prayers. I know you posted it on X, so he's fine, but we had to rush him to the emergency room, my 14-year-old son. He's fine. Oh, but it was scary there for a few hours, so we couldn't do the show. So thank you for all of your kindness on that. All right, let's continue with the news, shall we? Here's a story that should make everyone think twice before spitting into a tube and mailing it off to a giant tech company. Genetic testing company 23andMe has just filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy this morning, and its CEO, Anne Wojcicki, I never say her last name, Wojcicki? Anne Wojcicki, yes, the sister of the former YouTube CEO, Susan Wojcicki. So, man, these sisters, powerful, powerful tech players, right?
Boss lady.
And ex-wife of Google founder Sergey Brin, by the way, who loves data, loves having those big CIA contracts as well, has stepped down. Now, the company enters a court-supervised sale of its assets. So now the big question, what the hell happens to the genetic data of millions of Americans, and what happens if it winds up in the hands of a foreign adversary? Like, what if a Chinese company buys all the data without your consent at all? They own it as an asset, right? So it just gets sent. This is your DNA we're talking about here. One of the most personal, sensitive pieces of data imaginable, and now it might end up on the auction block. Remember, 23andMe already had a massive data breach back in 2023. We covered it here at the time, and it exposed info from nearly 7 million people, including family trees, health predispositions, and more. The hacker at the time didn't even have to break in. All they did was use old login credentials. Just logged in, and then 23andMe's system gave them access to connected family data without any additional verification at all. Edward Snowden at the time said, companies that collect your genetic data are building permanent records about you and your children that can be sold, stolen, or seized. And so let's talk about this, regulating this, right? Because there was a bunch of Democrats who are trying to push, Chuck Schumer included, trying to push to regulate this. But as Snowden points out, regulating it is one thing, and it only works if the data is never leaked or stolen. Watch.
The problem isn't data protection. The problem is data collection. Regulating the protection of data presumes that the collection of data in the first place was proper, that it was appropriate, that it doesn't represent a threat or a danger, that it's okay to spy on everybody all the time, whether they're your customers or whether they're your citizens, so long as it never leaks, so long as only you are in control of what it is that you've sort of stolen from everybody.
Yeah. California Attorney General sent this message out basically saying people who are using 23andMe need to delete their data as soon as possible. Like, you can log in, and under California's law, you can log in and delete your own stuff immediately if you want to, apparently. I mean, you know, hopefully they're not holding it somewhere else, but you can log in and go through the deletion process. And
well, Edward Snowden talks about that in his book. That you never really delete something.
Right.
Even if you delete something from your own computer, it still exists in some phantom form in another part of the computer. So do not rely on deleting things, ever.
I guess the idea is that maybe it wouldn't be sold off, but that's the problem. It's like, how is this going to be used? And could it be used in warfare? So I'm not a fan of this guy in general, Colorado Democratic Congressman Jason Crow. You know, he's a big fan of illegal immigration in the United States, but he has been warning about this. It's interesting why Democrats, like, they're very pro privacy when it comes to this kind of stuff, but they're very pro-censorship. I can't wrap my head around it, like these weird contradictions here. But here is Jason Crow, Democrat from Colorado, warning us all about what happens if this data leaks. Watch.
Yeah, so to be clear, I think one of the things we're talking about here is that there are now weapons under development and developed that are designed to target specific people. Right, that's what this is, where you can actually take someone's DNA, take their medical profile, and you can target a biological weapon that will kill that person or take them off the battlefield or make them inoperable. So you can't have a discussion about this without talking about privacy and commercial data and the protection of commercial data, because expectations of privacy have degraded over the last 20 years. Young folks actually have very little expectation of privacy. That's what the polling and the data show. And people will very rapidly spit into a cup and send it into 23andMe and get really interesting data about their background. And guess what? Their DNA is now owned by a private company and can be sold off with very little intellectual property protection or privacy protection. And we don't have legal and regulatory regimes to deal with that. So we have to have an open and public discussion, and this is going to have to be a political discussion about what does the protection of healthcare information, DNA information, and your data look like, because that data is actually going to be procured and collected by our adversaries for the development of these systems.
Wow. So how will they use it in warfare? Mm-hmm. I can only imagine how they would use it in warfare, targeting individuals in certain areas, with biometric data that they have stored in a database that they can then use, using drone programs to launch and go after these individuals.
That's dystopic.
It's already happening.
Yeah.
All right, we got more news to get. Go ahead.
They were talking about feeding the AI for the mRNA stuff. Like that. That's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So. Yeah. I don't know. I just want to know where this data is going to go. Like, who's going to have who? And should the Trump administration step in here, if they're going to sell this stuff, now it goes up to bankruptcy auction. Like, are they going to sell it to like a Chinese company? Is it going to go to some? I mean, who's going to buy it? It seems like a national security threat, right? If it's all of us and all of our data is now being pushed out there, this seems to be a national security threat. But I don't know. Let us know what your thoughts are on this. We got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to talk about these super cartels, these massive cartels that are now using software born out of the NSO group in Israel. Yes, Pegasus spyware to spy on you, to spy on Americans, to spy on journalists, to target individuals. So these cartels are not just like a little group of guys in a car that roll up with guns. They're some of the most sophisticated terrorist organizations, and they're inside the United States as we speak. We're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to tell you about our friends over at Black Forest Supplements, because what has been covered up? A lot of these natural supplements have been covered up because they don't want you to know that you can use them instead of Big Pharma to get healthy. The health benefits of coca, for instance, the flavanols found in cocoa beans, the compounds found in that have been found to boost nitric oxide, improve heart health, regenerate brain cells. And before you roll your eyes, you just flip through some heavily redacted Epstein files. This isn't some woohoo nonsense. Let me show you. Harvard scientist Dr. William Lee actually backs this up about cocoa flavanols. Watch.
So studies have been done to show that the flavanols in cocoa stimulate stem cells to come out of your bone marrow like bees in a beehive in your bloodstream, and they go out and they find wherever it needs to be repaired. If it's in your heart, they'll fix it. If it's in your liver, they'll fix it. If it's in your skin, they'll fix it. And so we can eat foods like high flavanol cocoa in order to be able to actually get the stem cells to work a little bit better. Now, how do we know this actually functions, works in people? Well, clinical studies have been done with high flavanol cocoa to show that in like men who are in their 60s with heart disease, they could actually just have 2 cups of dark chocolate hot cocoa a day for a month. Yeah. And they doubled the amount of stem cells in your bloodstream, and their circulation improved measurably. And then what's even more important and impressive is that there was a study called the COSMOS study that was completed recently that showed that eating high flavanol cocoa decreases the risk of cardiovascular death.
Yeah.
Right? Over a period
like
of
a statin.
Like a statin. Right. Exactly. Except made by eating the same thing that you use to make chocolate.
That's right.
So that's right, dark chocolate. But here's the thing, flavanols are the good stuff found in cocoa beans, but they're usually destroyed during the chocolate making process. That's where Black Forest Supplements comes in. They've created the first ever high flavanol cocoa powder packed with everything your body actually needs, and it's only 20 calories. You can mix it in your coffee, it's delicious, or your protein shake. And it tastes amazing. It can boost your body's natural stem cell production. Hollywood elites, of course, dropped $50,000 on that weird placenta stem cell injections. But you can just drink cocoa powder and get the same benefits without selling out your soul for it. Right now, you get 40% off for the next 48 hours. This stuff always sells out on their website. So that for the next 48 hours, you get 40% off. Go there and check it out. BlackForestSupplements.com/redacted. I'm a huge Black Forest Supplements fan. I use it every day. It's really fantastic. So 40% off. You can hit the link in the description or just scan the QR code right there on your screen. BlackForestSupplements.com/redacted.
All right, this story is going to scare you. I'm not trying to rage bait you. I did not come up with the term super cartels. This is now a thing, so you need to know about it. Also, it's going to make you a bit afraid of your phone, but don't turn off Redacted until you hear about it. Mexican cartels have the spyware that the Israeli government uses to spy on Palestinians, and now Mexico can use it on Americans. They can get into your phone. They can see everything you do, everything you search. They also can do what's called a room tap, meaning they use the phone's camera and microphone to spy on you wherever you are, putting your kid to bed, what have you. Now, the Epoch Times reported this in depth, but this is actually not brand new information. What's new is that we are at war with the cartels and how it can be used against us. So pay attention. It's called Pegasus, and it can get into your phone even if you don't click. It's called no-click malware because you don't have to click a link to get it. And it can detect when it's draining your battery and then pause itself so you don't know that it's there. This is terrifying. Now, to be clear, absolutely clear about Pegasus, it was developed by an Israeli firm called the NSO Group, not the Israeli government themselves. Israel has never admitted to use it, but it was found on Palestinian officials' phones since at least 2020. Now, Israel never confirmed or denied that, but NSO, the software group that owns it, says that whenever they want to make a sale of their software, they have to get it approved by the Israeli Ministry of Defense. For every time someone wants to use this Pegasus software, Israel's government has to sign off on it, which would mean that Israel has signed off, our greatest ally, has signed off on Mexico having this spyware, and now they might use it against us. That's fun, right? So let's rethink this biggest ally bit. Now, in Greek mythology, Pegasus is a winged horse with magical powers that can go between the mortal and immortal worlds. It's like a unicorn without the horn. The software Pegasus has similar magical abilities because it can jump digital boundaries. It was developed when governments realized that a wiretap would no longer work because of encryption. So they need to hack your phone, the phone itself, not the data transfer. Now, this was reported by the author Nicole Perlroth from the New York Times. She was the one who covered the Edward Snowden leaks when they broke, and she reported it in the New York Times in 2016. I want to refer to her reporting because I think she does a good job of saying exactly what this does in this book. So let's talk about it. And again, hold on to your butts. Now, she says that by hacking the endpoints of the communication, the phone itself, NSO can access data before it was encrypted on the device. Now, these two people, Julio and Levy, they pitched this as not remote access technology, but instead now government surveillance. And they called it Pegasus, like the mythical winged horse it was named for, because it can do the impossible, capture vast amounts of previously inaccessible data, phone calls, text messages, email, contacts, calendar appointments, GPS location, Facebook, WhatsApp, and Skype without leaving a trace. And it can do what NSO calls a room tap, gather sounds and snapshots in and around the room using the phone's microphone and video camera. And it can deny targets access to certain websites and applications and grab screenshots off their phone. It can record your every search and browsing activity. And one of the biggest selling points is that it's battery conscious, which means that when you have spyware, you notice your phone is beginning to be drained, the battery starts to go down. But But Pegasus can see when it's killing your battery life, shut itself down, and then wait for the target to connect to Wi-Fi so it can keep spying on you. Now, they say that NSO had already sold it. Now, look here to two eager customers, Mexico and the UAE. And they are now also offering it to other governments in Europe and the Middle East. She says that also the Italians are scurrying to protect as many people from NSO as possible. And longtime clients in Mexico and the Gulf threaten to take their business to do business with the Israelis. Mexico and the UAE. So someone in Mexico has had this at least since 2016. And the Trump and the Biden White House knew it. Right. So who in Mexico would need this?
Well, there was a journalist that was killed in 2017 who was an investigative journalist who was going after the cartels. And you had the shady Mexican leaders in Mexico who specifically made the deal with NSO Group, got the software and were able to facilitate giving this so they could target journalists and go after cartel opposition.
Well, NSO had told her, the reporter, that three Mexican government agencies had it. And accordingly, they are the country's Center for Investigation and National Security and Attorney General Office and its Department of Defense. Well, if you know anything about Mexican politics, it's that the cartels are involved in the government, right? They are infiltrated. The NSO says, well, they're so proud that the Mexican government used this to catch El Chapo Guzman, the famous drug lord. But when she investigated further, she found it also, as Clayton just said, was used on journalists and also, strangely, experts who had covered government corruption and were in favor of a soda tax because that was big money in Mexico. And again, can you protect yourself from it? Not really, because you don't have to click it to put it in. They can just do it. And in fact, it costs about $500,000 per install for both iPhones and Androids. Neither of us are safe, or you can get a package deal. 10 phones for $650,000. Now, again, all of this was published in the New York Times in 2016. So we should have known this, that this is where this would land us. And again, if Israel is our biggest ally, maybe we should have asked them, are you putting this on anyone who could use it against us? That might have been nice, considering all the money we send Israel, that maybe give us a heads up if you're going to sell some software that spies on us, given that NSO has said that they need permission from the Israeli Defense Ministry to sell this. You think? Right? Okay. No, no outrage? You want to join me in outrage? I'm looking for a... Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, if you...
Okay,
So we know that they have to sign off on this, and right, they're using it to target journalists specifically and going after people who are in opposition to these drug cartels, right, and to these kingpins. And so they're using it to target journalists, and then they assassinate the journalists, like Javier Valdez and his group. So after Javier Valdez was assassinated in 2017 in Mexico, the group surrounding him, his helpers, other journalists surrounding Javier Valdez, they were targeted, and they found and confirmed that Pegasus software, spyware, was used to target them.
Yes.
So this, I mean, we have the evidence here that it's being used to target journalists and people who are in opposition to these, you know, these thugs.
Right. So how then can the cartel use it to fight the U.S. government that's trying to shut down their business? How can they do that? I mean, we don't know. I'm only extrapolating here.
Well, blackmail. Blackmail. I mean, if they're grabbing screenshots, they're planting things on their phone. And by the way, it can be used in reverse too. It can be used to actually put things on their phone, not just screenshots, like they're grabbing stuff of what these people are doing, but to be able to put things on their phone as well.
Right. Now, you probably have heard the lore of rival drug cartels in Mexico. Well, now they're sort of teaming up and they have military-grade weapons. These gangs are notorious for being violent against each other, but the U.S. government is now a common enemy, and they're being called super cartels in hopes of surviving the next 4 years. So what they're calculating is if we work together, we can get through ICE, we can get through the U.S. Border Patrol, we can continue our business. They also have what's called narco drones. They can scan for Border Patrol agents and they can deliver the drugs, the drones themselves, and they're armed with explosives. And it's worth remembering the cartels are trying to deliver these drugs to our kids. It's mostly young white males. That's their biggest audience, their biggest money makers. What's funny about that?
I'm just laughing in the chat room because I think someone made a funny. JB says Israel probably didn't know that it would be used against journalists.
Yeah.
Well, and think about that. If they could put things on your phone, they could accuse you of a crime and then put the evidence of the crime on your phone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. That's terrifying.
We just covered you got Pete Hegseth and JD Vance in a group chat. Like if you could get people could be grabbing information off of our political leaders, off their phones, giving that to the drug cartels.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
Exactly.
And that's where a lot of people think that there's a lot of blackmail, that's why people have power over these individuals. Right.
Right. And so with all this dangerous weaponry, you think, well, what do we got? Do we got some stuff we can defend ourselves or push back against this? Well, not if it involves launching attacks inside Mexico. And again, as we've established that the cartel is infiltrated in the Mexican government, the Epoch Times points out that even if we were going to strike inside Mexico where the cartels are, they would be tipped off by the shadow government because they are infiltrated. Although I do want to ask, if you read this and you're like, well, we said we wouldn't attack inside Mexico's borders without giving them a heads up. And the Mexican government, if we give them a heads up, would tell the cartels, when have we given heads up to countries we're going to bomb before? When has that stopped us?
In the movie, The American President. Remember that?
No.
They gave him a heads up so the building would be empty and only the janitor would be there when they bombed him. Like they kind of gave him a little bit of a heads up. It's in fiction. That's the only time that this actually happens.
Yeah. In Syria or Yemen, when we bombed there, I didn't see that in the signal chat we just covered. Do we give them a heads up? Why? I'm not saying that I want to bomb Mexico or bomb cartels or anything like this, but I very much would like to win the war on drugs. That looks like it's going to be violent. But at the same time, it's just kind of strange. We don't do that. We don't bomb inside countries without giving them a heads up. And I'm like, but we do. I'm not saying I want to do it, but yeah, we've done that before. So it seems
go ahead. If they were smart, the sound of the planes coming should be warning enough, right?
Well, you they say they've got undetectable missiles. Drones.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Do they have any kind of radar detection? I mean, I know we've got some stuff, we've got some cool stuff in our military. Is this the only way to win? I mean, military officials are saying we actually don't know how we're going to win this war. It's way more dangerous than we thought. So now we all know. We all know that. So let us know your thoughts.
Strata Comgro says Pegasus was designed as an exploit to remain embedded in Apple iOS and all Android updates and versions. That's how it remains undetectable. It attaches itself to mobile OS and apps in your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it does.
Great.
And in fact, she talks about that, how they launched it as they tried to sell it to Apple to do remote IT work. Like you call up and you'll be like, oh, I can't get on this or whatever.
Yeah.
And they wanted to sell it to Apple. I wish Apple had bought it because it's gone to a much darker place. So let us know what you think about that. All right. We're going to move on now and talk about Israel assassinating journalists, which is not new, but we have new stories, new deaths to cover here on Redacted. Also, we're going to take a peek beneath the pyramids, this big story, this big intrigue. There's something to see there, and we're going to see it. But before we do, we want to tell you about our sponsor, Kickoff, because if you are trying to build up your credit, then Kickoff is a great resource for you. It is the number one credit building app out there. Now, what it does is give you a line of credit that you can use to purchase Kickoff's awesome educational products. And while you are doing that and faithfully paying off your credit account, then your credit score is just going to continue to improve. It's going to get better and better. Now, this is a great thing to do if you're concerned about your credit score, but you're planning a big purchase like a car or a house or something like that. Well, it's almost like a credit workout because you can use this number one credit building app. It's in all the app stores and plans start at just $5 a month. So there's no credit check, no hidden fees, and no interest. And again, it's a small monthly expense. You're using it to get something that's awesome, that's educational, and you're also improving your own credit score. So check them out right now. Go to getkickoff.com/redacted. You must go to this landing page in order to activate our offer because you can get 80% off their plans if you go to getkick, and it's no C in kick, KIKOFF.com/redacted, and you can get your first month for just $1 or look through their plans for just redacted listeners. So again, do your credit exercise, check out Kickoff, see if this works for you. Getkickoff.com/redacted.
Well, one of Israel's greatest pastimes appears to be that of targeting and assassinating journalists. They do it regularly. This morning, Israel killed two more journalists in two separate attacks, two totally unrelated attacks. As of this morning, Israel has killed now over 200 journalists since October 7th, 208 to be specific. And of course, the world is totally silent about it. The mainstream media will not say a word about it. Journalist Hassam Shabbat was assassinated this morning. He just posted this the other day on X before returning to the front lines. He said, "I thought it was over and I'd finally get some rest, but the genocide is back in full force. And I'm back on the front lines, of course, because that ceasefire has fallen apart." And now Hassam has been shot and killed as of this morning. And by the way, the U.S. is allowing all of this to happen. Where is the outrage on all of this? Let's talk to independent journalist Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media, who spent quite a bit of time in this region and knows it better than just about anyone else. Dan, great to see you this morning. So can you kind of bring us up to speed? Like, where are we? The two journalists today killed in two separate attacks. Can you paint the picture for us how this all happened?
Well, the better known one, Hossam Shabbat, was a correspondent for Al Jazeera, Qatar's state-owned media outlet, who has been covering the atrocities in northern Gaza since the genocide began on October 7th. And he has provided really the most important coverage in that area in the Arabic language. And people translate his tweets, and he's done spaces and this kind of thing. So English language, he reaches English audience languages as well. He was just 23 years old, had stopped his university studies on October 7th, of course, and hoped to resume them, but never got the chance because Israel targeted him in what appears to be a drone strike on the vehicle he was riding in and killed him in the spot in the village of Beit Hanun in northern Gaza this morning. And just about an hour before that, Israel killed Mohammed Mansour, a journalist for Palestine Today, a Palestinian channel. So they are number 207 and 208 journalist to be killed since October 7th in Gaza, which is just an incredible number. And I mean, I can just say, I was in Gaza during the 2014 war, if we can call it that, more of a slaughter, which at that time was unprecedented, though pales in comparison to what's happened over the past year and a half. And, you know, just to kind of give a bit of perspective, I was there in the last basically week of war, most of which was a temporary ceasefire. But when that temporary ceasefire ended, I decided to stay. I had the opportunity to leave, and I went to a media tower in Gaza a little bit after sundown to be with some colleagues. And Israel decided to take out some towers that night. They began targeting large towers, 13, 14-story towers, to basically remove Gaza's skyline. And that was basically, we opened the windows so shards of glass, when the explosions happen, shards of glass don't go flying at you. and when these massive bunker buster missiles strike, they create such not only huge explosions that everything shakes, but the entire sky is filled with ash and smoke and it all comes rushing in. And that was the most terrifying night of my life, without a doubt. And I spent the night in there just kind of in shock and thinking really of 9/11, of these kinds of attacks. And then as the sun came up, there were about 24 Palestinian journalists who came in, who had been out in the field all night and came into the building and into the office where I was. And I was just really in shock, in awe. I couldn't believe that these journalists were out there covering this attack all night, that they were exposing themselves to this danger. And I really understood I got a taste, just a little taste of the level of danger that they exposed themselves to. And, you know, in this war, this genocide, for Hossam Shabbat, for Mohammed Mansour, for Ismail Agul, for any of these journalists who have been killed by Israel, and any of them who are still reporting today, bravely reporting, when they put on that press vest, that doesn't give them safety. That makes them a target. So they could stay in their homes, not as if it would really be safe in their homes, but they could hide and try to avoid everything. But they go out to try to deliver the news, to try to show to audiences what exactly is happening. So it's just a despicable crime, the mass murder of journalists, as well as healthcare workers and civilians of all kinds. But it should be roundly condemned by everyone who's in this profession, in the United States in particular, because this is where, especially in Washington, D.C., where the political support, the diplomatic support, the military support comes from to kill these journalists.
I'm just so perplexed as to, like, everyone watching right now, I don't care where you come down on, you know, ideologically on this, but killing of journalists who are supposed to be the eyes and ears of the world, their cameras showing us what's happening in these war zones. We should be outraged. All of us should be outraged. What do you think the mission is, the goal? Why is, and for, let me just, I guess, play devil's advocate here, because I'm sure there will be some who, you know, are totally in the tank for Israel and they can do no wrong, who will be in our comments section and saying stuff like, well, I'm sure that it was an accident. It was an accident that Israel couldn't possibly be targeting these journalists. What would you say to those people who would say that in the comments?
Well, you'd have to just be simply naive to believe that it's an accident. And in fact, Israel made clear that it was going to kill Hossam Shabbat and others when it actually published back in November of 2024 a document that it claims to have found in Gaza, saying that he was actually a Hamas sniper. They claimed that this journalist, in between all of his time doing constant coverage on the ground, was actually a sniper for Hamas's armed wing. And they published this very grainy document, which we can show, and they have a very kind of blurry, zoomed in, almost sort of distorted picture of Hossam Shabbat and five other journalists. And they claim that these guys are members of Hamas's armed wing and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad armed wing. Now, this was never verified. The Israeli military never showed, you know, like a chain of custody of how they found, where they found this, how they knew it was true. They don't show any of that to the public. They just expect the Western media and the Western public to accept this as factual. But we know that Israel has repeatedly lied. I mean, one of the most throughout this war, one of the most memorable ones maybe is when they went into the basement of the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza City and claimed that right. There was a list of like a schedule for people watching the captives and hostages in the basement. And they showed it, that the IDF spokesperson Daniel Hagari showed this supposed schedule. And in fact, it was just a simple calendar that anyone who reads Arabic would immediately recognize. So it was just a very blatant lie. And we've seen this kind of thing again and again and again. So the Israeli military, the Israeli government that produced this document has absolutely no credibility. There's also a thread going around from I'm not going to call him a journalist. He's really a propagandist named Eitan Fishberger, who claimed that Hossam Shabbat is a Hamas member. Now, he doesn't claim, like this dossier does, this document the Israeli military produced, that Hossam Shabbat was actually a sniper, was a combatant, but he just says he was a Hamas member. And he shows pictures from Hossam Shabbat's Facebook and social media that he was putting out videos and comments on October 7th and photos of him from before, but it's not even clear. There's no definitive evidence that he was a member of Hamas. And even if he were, there's a difference between being a member of a political party, which Hamas is, and a combatant. And those are two very different things. It's like, imagine if a foreign country, say China, occupied the United States and declared that any member of the Republican Party is a terrorist. Now, does that mean that's not just Republican people who are Republicans who are in the military, who are actively fighting the Chinese occupation? Let's say anybody who belongs to the Republican Party is now considered a terrorist and can be killed according to that kind of logic. And so there are all kinds of discrepancies about the claims going around about Hossam Shabbat, but there's no evidence, and it's clearly a lie, that he was a sniper. And even if he was a member of Hamas, that does not give the right to kill a journalist. So this is it's just an atrocious crime.
What about Jewish journalists? I mean, when you were in Gaza, you are Jewish. Well, I think our audience maybe doesn't know that, but you are Jewish. You were there in Gaza. I mean, is there sort of leniency given, I guess, to like Jewish journalists, American journalists, journalists from other parts of the world, British journalists? Is it just like targeting specifically those who might be Palestinian journalists?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as the way I was treated in Gaza, I spent roughly 7 months in the Gaza Strip from 2014 to 2017 as a foreign reporter. And I was free to do what I wanted. Hamas never interfered with my work. In fact, at one point they found out that I had told some people, sort of random Palestinians in a neighborhood, that I was Jewish, and they took me and said, don't do that, you know. So they were actually keeping a sort of extra, they're giving me extra protection because they know that maybe somebody would become suspicious and doesn't understand the difference between Jewish and Israeli or something like this. And so, you know, there are so many foreign reporters that went into the Gaza Strip, Jewish, non-Jewish, from all kinds of countries, that I never heard anyone complain about interference. And if there was any threat, it was from the Israeli military, whether being bombed or shot. If you went to any of the demonstrations along the fence on the edge of Gaza. So that's about it.
And you would think with these drone strikes, you know, in the case of Hossam Shabbat, he was targeted in a targeted drone strike. So they were following him, it appears, right? They knew where he was. They had his location, and they specifically went after him. This wasn't like some random shooting.
Right. It's not as if some, you know, artillery shell that just came from who knows where and is not that accurate. I mean, this is clearly it's reported as an airstrike, I think. More what is most likely is that it was a drone strike. So, I mean, I've been to Israeli military conferences where they boast that where they're selling their products to all kinds of militaries from around the world, and they boast that these drones can see the Nike symbol on a shoe. So they knew exactly who they were going after, and they had made it clear that they were going to kill Hossam Shabbat back in November 2024, and they had killed other many, I mean, we're, you know, this is 207, 208 journalists killed. His colleague, Ismail Aghoul, was killed in a drone strike right after Ismail Haniyeh, the Hamas leader, was killed in Tehran. Ismail Aghoul went to the house of, in Gaza, of Haniyeh, and for doing that, Israel targeted him with a drone strike, and they blew off his head. He's sitting there. There's video. It's on my ex account, and you can find it elsewhere. If you look up Ismail Aghoul, he's in the driver's seat wearing a press jacket, and his head is splattered. There's just blood and guts where his head should be. This is what the Israeli military is doing to Palestinian journalists, and no one on CNN, no one on Fox News, NBC, The New York Times, liberal, conservative, mainstream media will talk about it. It's simply criminal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are, and, you know, there's some troubled days ahead right now as the ceasefire has, you know, collapsed. The genocide continues. Thousands of people in protesting the Netanyahu government right now all across Israel. Where's the coverage of that, by the way? Like, where is the mainstream media coverage of the people that are calling for Netanyahu's ouster? Israelis calling for him to be ousted. Where's the coverage of that? I don't know. But Dan, it's unbelievable. Thank you for this. Thank you for your perspective. And we appreciate you as always. Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media. You can follow him on X and you can see more of this coverage there. Dan, great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Clayton.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. And Grover excited up there as well. Someone in the chat just asked as well, Marie Thomas, because, you know, again, Dan is Jewish. He's a Jewish journalist. Marie Thomas says, please have him explain the difference between a Jew and an Israeli. And I think...
Oh, don't get him started.
Don't
on
get
that.
Started with Dan. Dan, yeah. We'd love to have Dan come back on specifically to do a segment on that and to dive deeply into that. Because, you know, you speak to a lot of Israelis, they're like, oh, I'm not really Jewish. I'm just Israeli. Like, they don't really adhere to any sort of religious ideology at all. So there's huge differences between that. But I'll have Dan explain it because...
No, well, Dan is brilliant about this. And we've also had on Rabbi... I can't remember his name, we did, but about how the Israeli government says that it represents Jews around the world, but they reject an Israeli nationality. It's very muddled because it's a dragnet for who you can and cannot speak on behalf of. But absolutely, criticizing the Israeli government has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. And so that's a really great question, and we should parse that out another time.
Someone in the chat earlier, before Dan, we talked about Dan being Jewish, said, I bet Dan's a Muslim.
Oh, he gets that all the time. Like, follow him on X. People call him Hamas. People, because Dan hits the ground. He goes to the places
he doesn't suffer fools.
Around,
he doesn't
and
suffer
he
fools.
Doesn't give us crap about what you're going to say about him. And so he's kind of like Tucker Carlson. If you come for him on X, it does not stop him. So you can keep doing that if you want to, if it makes you feel good. No. But he's going to continue to seek the truth.
And I asked Gina in the chat, because Gina's like, you know, we're not trolls just because we disagree with Dan. And I said, well, what did you disagree with him on? She says, well, I've seen plenty of videos of these so-called journalists who were carrying out atrocities on October 7th. So
I want to see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you have video of Hassam Shabbat, who was assassinated this morning carrying out atrocities on October 7th, please send it. But I don't think you do. But I think what you're saying is that maybe you saw a video or something of one person and who, I don't know. But anyway, 208 journalists killed. Okay. Anyway, this needs to stop right now.
And, you know, we can rewind the clock a couple of years. You want to talk about Shireen Abu Akleh? Who was targeted by the IDF. Would you like to discuss that? Because that was far before October 7th, and an independent investigations showed that the Israeli government did target her, and she was a Palestinian American.
Yeah.
We don't even need these more recent examples to discuss the targeting of journalists, but we can if you want to.
Please send it to me. I'd love to see the footage if there is footage of that. And I think you'd be an amazing journalist if you have footage of Hassam Shabbat carrying out atrocities. That'd be amazing. And Pine Tree says, nice spray tan redacted. Redacted clowns. Thank you, Pine Tree. No, we're in Florida. This is an actual tan, which is what you get when you go to Florida. Thank you for that. All right,
show
we've got
your tan, honey. Your tan lines.
No, I'm not going to show them.
Do it.
You show them yours. Okay, we've got more news to get to. Let's just get to it then, shall we? A team team of researchers has just announced a groundbreaking discovery beneath Egypt's Giza Plateau, a vast complex of underground chambers, shafts extending nearly 2 kilometers under the famous pyramids. Italian-Scottish researchers claim they discovered a vast underground city under the pyramids. It's an unbelievable story, using synthetic aperture radar. So, and why now? Like, how they just discovered this now? Really? Jason Shurka is the host of the Pyramid Code on Unified TV, who's been watching this very closely and, of course, has a lot of thoughts about this. So we invited Jason here on the show to talk about this and have a conversation. Jason, welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
All right. So when you heard this news, over the past few days, when the Italian video was released and you have to go through the subtitles and sort of unpack all of this, and I saw it on X, I said, I'm sorry, hold on a second. There's a massive underground city underneath Giza that's 3 kilometers deep, hundreds and hundreds of meters wide. Like, what? What did you think when you heard this?
So what I'd like to do is actually break down a few facts for everybody, because everybody's hearing this news from a bunch of different sources. Some is true, some isn't. Nobody really knows what to think. But what I thought when I first saw it was, thank God, finally somebody is speaking about this, because what you're hearing now is nothing new. As a matter of fact, the study, or so-called the research that these Italian researchers did, their names are Corrado Malanga, I believe, and Filippo Biondi. They're both researchers in the radar and remote sensing research aspect of things. And they actually published a peer-reviewed study, and they researched in an article titled Synthetic Aperture Radar Doppler Tomography Reveals Details of Undiscovered High-Resolution Internal Structure of the Great Pyramid of Giza. But guess when that was actually put out? It wasn't a few days ago. That research was put out in 2022. So my question, number one, why are we speaking about it now if it came out in 2022?
Right. Well, that is a great question. Do you have an answer as to why we're just learning about this now? I mean, and I know you have documented a lot of this going back years. And in fact, there's recorded information going back to, I mean, wherever you come down on this, I don't know. But Billy Meyer and his Contactee publications in 1953, and this is verifiable, by the way. This is copyrighted, verifiable information of Billy Meyer specifically talking about going underneath, being transported in a beam ship and going underneath the pyramids in a massive underground chamber. Now, you might laugh at it. But it was published in 1953. I mean, so why are we learning about this now, Jason?
So I'll cover both sides. I'll cover the factual side, and I'll cover the side that some people may call weird, but it's important to note, because there are coincidences, and then there are things that just can't be coincidence. So factually, what happened over here is it's called SAR data, synthetic aperture radar data. Along with that came this proprietary software that was created by one of those researchers, the Italian researchers. And the way that it works is it transforms the radar signals that they're detecting into something called photonic information. Now, the simple way of explaining that is it tracks vibrations down to the millimeter to identify underground structures without excavation. So it's a very non-invasive way of being able to figure out what's deep below us. Now, this research was done on the second largest pyramid of the Giza Plateau. It's known as the Khafre Pyramid. What they found was 5 identical structures inside the pyramid itself. But what was even more interesting than that is underneath those 5 identical structures were these 8 massive, they look like cylinders. Nobody really knows what they are. They found that they were hollow inside, and they're surrounded by what looks like a coil. Some people are saying that the radar seems to show that there's stairs bringing you down. And on the bottom of those cylinders, which by the way are 648 meters each, that's massive, let alone to put something underground 3,000-4,000 years ago, whenever that happened. On the bottom of those cylinders, you have 2 very large cubic structures that seem to be some sort of basement, like what you were just talking about that guy spoke about in 1953. Now, each cubic basement, I call them basements, nobody knows what they are, measure about 80 meters on each side. That's about almost a football field in terms of each side of that cube. These are massive, massive structures underground. And the entire structure extends about, not exactly, but about 2 kilometers beneath the surface of all 3 pyramids of the Giza Plateau. Now, they're telling us that, you know, and this is at least what the textbooks tell us, how I grew up in school. The pyramids were tombs for these pharaohs that they wanted to honor. And right. They built them using ramps and sledges and hammers. Now, this just blows that theory and that history out of the water, because you don't build what we just spoke about with ramps and sledges and hammers. There's something else going on. But my question that we have to ask, and then we can go into the weird part, factually, the proportions—
As if that's not weird enough.
The proportions yeah. of the structure itself have certain mathematical constants built into them, like pi, 3.14. The golden ratio, and the most interesting one to me, modern science calls it a coincidence. I don't buy it. The speed of light. Now, how do we get the speed of light? The latitude line that the Great Pyramid is sitting on is 29.9792458 degrees. And if you just move that decimal by 2, you're going to get 299,792,458. And what that number is in meters per second is the speed of light. Now, call that a coincidence? I don't think it's a coincidence. They knew something, and we don't understand how they knew it. But somebody's just saying they placed it to this degree, 6-7 decimal points after the zero, to the exact point of the speed of light in meters per second. They knew something that we don't understand today.
That's wild.
Now, there's some texts, and I think you shared them with our team earlier, where I think, and this was published in the Pyramid Code. So the pharaohs brought with them a different form of technology called electromagnetic pulsation. And this technology gave them the ability to build massive pyramids. Underneath these massive structures are very large basements that house the tools and technology used to make them. So to my knowledge, no one has found these basements under the pyramids, according to the text that you provided. So this was published, back years ago, that we were being told that they built these massive basements there. So we have the documentation of this.
So what you're reading from is a document called the Pyramid Code. It's not something that I wrote. It's something that I was given back in July or August of 2020. The person who wrote it likes kind of remaining behind the scenes. He doesn't like being in the spotlight. He gave it to me and he said you could share it with the world. So that's what I did. And everybody called me crazy. They said, Jason, they're pyramids, they're tombs, leave it alone. They built it with water and hammers and sledges, and that's about it. And it turns out that when this document that came out on September 9th of 2020, free for the world on my website, it says exactly that. It says that this technology gave them the ability to build massive pyramids. And it specifically says, as you said, and I quote from the document, I'm reading it right in front of me, underneath these massive structures are very large basements that house the tools and technology used to make them. Now, this is a 44-page document. There's a lot of information that goes into what some may call the non-factual side of things. But when you kind of connect the dots, a lot of this makes sense. There's all these theories of, did humans build them? Was it really slaves? Or were they extraterrestrial? All I know is we can barely build something like that today with the technology that we have. So there had to be some form of intervention back then. And we don't even need to go into textbooks. Look at the writing on the wall, literally in the pyramid. Look at the hieroglyphics on the wall. They tell us the story. There are literal carvings on the wall showing us pictures from 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago that they carved, basically telling us that they had other forms of technology that are in many cases foreign to us today. And all you have to do is ask yourself, how do you pick up a stone, not to mention many stones, that our modern day technology and cranes can't pick up today? And if we connect the dots and use some logic, when you use sound, and there are certain universities that have done this, using sound waves to move very, very heavy objects without touching them, it's all a matter of frequency. You use the right frequency, you can break a glass.
And isn't there
to move things?
Isn't there imagery of this in the Mayan pyramids as well, using these sound techniques, and almost it looks like magic wands of some of the imagery directing the building of these structures with what looks like a magic wand?
You know, it's very interesting that you brought that up, because that's another point of logic that we need to bring up. I like going into the theories and connecting some dots, but I need fact to base that off of. And from what we're told, years, thousands of years ago, we were not very advanced, as far as they tell us at least. And therefore, we couldn't have really communicated across continents, right? Christopher Columbus only discovered America, you know, a few hundred years ago. But if that were true, please explain to me, and this is a question, not an answer, explain to me, how is it that there are pyramids all over the planet that have, in some cases, the same inscriptions and carvings into the stone of certain objects and stories, if we didn't have any interplanetary communication back then? And it begs the question, well, did we? And are they not telling us something? Because if what I'm saying right now is accepted by modern day science and archaeologists around the world, it changes all of our history. It would bring us to the point of saying maybe we were more advanced back then than we are today. And maybe had those advancements today, humanity would be a whole lot more empowered. But if you go to politics, look what we're fighting over. We're fighting over oil. We're fighting over gas. We're fighting over energy. What happens if what the Pyramid Code series and the document says is true? What happens if what Nikola Tesla was saying over 100 years ago was true and free energy is possible? Well, the people that are fighting over natural gas now have a common enemy. It wouldn't just be World War III. It would be World War IV based on what they would be fighting over, because free energy would change the world for the better for humanity. It would destroy the powers that be today.
Right. Oh, it's unbelievable. I kind of come back to just thinking about Billy Meyer again, 1953, telling us what he saw there, and then people just dismiss this out of hand. Traveling there on these beam ships as a contactee case, you know, you can, again, dismiss it if you want. He published it in 1953 and told us about these massive caverns. So where do things stand now with the research on this, Jason? Like, I know there's people that want, obviously, a second opinion, you know, verifiable information. Now that we think that these things are there, these massive cylinders underneath the pyramids that go down, you know, 3 kilometers, where do we stand with the research? Are we going to go and do some sort of excavation, second opinion? Where do things go from here?
I'll give you my opinion on this. I can't share a fact, but my opinion, by, again, connecting certain dots and understanding the implications of such a revelation of what is now coming out to the world, because people knew about this for quite some time, I do not believe they're going to let us go down there and excavate. And even if they do, the findings that they find, I personally believe, will be hidden or kept secret for a period of time, because what the pyramids were really intended for, if you look at them with their mathematical formulas, and what a lot of people even use them for today, is healing. There are a lot of different rooms that create certain frequencies when you're sitting in there, and people till this day go there and have incredible, incredible experiences when it comes to healing. That actually inspired everything that we're doing around the world with certain healing technologies. We have a technology right now around the world that's in the shape and direct proportion of the Great Pyramid, called the Light System, specifically created and inspired after the Great Pyramid of Egypt, after the Great Pyramid on the Giza Plateau. So personally, just my personal opinion, I do not believe that they're going to allow more and more information to come out. But I do believe at some point they will have no choice, because it's just going to be so obvious. To get closer and closer to that truth, people need to start just considering maybe the history that we've been told is different than what we've been told. Maybe we're more powerful than what we've been told. And maybe there are a lot of secrets that when we start looking at them and start really saying, maybe our authorities aren't telling us everything, we start finding those truths. Meaning, don't just look for the expert in power to tell you something, because in many cases, the expert in power is paid off by the people that control this world. And if we start going into ourselves and start looking around the world and connecting some dots, we can look at what the experts say and hear what they say, but we also have to use our own logic. And when you have a proper balance between the two, this world will become a much healthier and more conscious place.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, Jason, great to see you. Thank you so much for this. Where can people find out more information with your work on the Pyramid Code?
So the Pyramid Code, you can actually download the entire document and watch the full series, which is most important because that's a mind-blowing series on Unified TV. It's UNIFYD.TV right down there below. And if anybody does want to learn more about that technology that actually mimics the shape and direct proportionality of the Great Pyramid, it actually looks just like this. It's pretty awesome. That's called the Light System. And you can find that at thelightsystems.com, in plural, thelightsystems.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason. Great to see you. Really appreciate that.
Thanks, Jason.
And, you know, yeah, we were in Egypt last year, and it's amazing when you walk in. My son was like, you can't fit anything in between them. They're like the blocks are so close together that there you can't even slide a credit card in between these things. And there's no tools. There'd be cranes. There would be all sorts of evidence.
Look, a lot of this stuff seems so far afield that most of us are like, I can't bother to believe that, which is fine. You don't need it in your everyday life. But if you decide to actually study the pyramids, there are way more questions than answers. When you start to break this down, you cannot explain it with modern day technology or modern day storytelling. And so, you know, again, you should not dismiss it until you study it. And once you study it, you have more questions. So it's not too far afield. So,
I even read like Nick Redfern's great book on it. Really fascinating about sound technology and with the pyramids. So
Clayton made me read that too before we went to see the pyramids.
Big Nick Redfern fan. Yeah. Love this stuff.
All right. Well, before we go,
Anunnaki?
Exactly.
Right?
And we had a whole conversation the other night with a friend of ours about this, like, or, you know, giants or Anunnaki involved in this. I know it sounds crazy to people, but, you know, we get so focused in our little worlds about, oh, we're going to talk about tariffs or these things or that thing. But there's so much, such bigger stuff out here that we need to talk about, you know?
Right. Okay. Well, what we're going to talk about right now, again, is to remind you that Redacted is brought to you by American Financing, which is a great way to dig yourself out of debt. If you have had a hard time in the last 4 or 5 years, who hasn't? It's not your fault. You know, interest rates are up, expenses are up, inflation hit us all hard. So if you're still carrying credit card balances with more than 20% interest rates, that's doo-doo. You need to get rid of that. You can ignore the one thing around you that you might have some equity in, which is your home. You shouldn't do that. That's where American Financing can help you. They can teach you to leverage that asset in order to dig yourself out of debt and build wealth instead of continuing to dig deeper and deeper. If you give them 10 minutes, they can give you a shot of saving $800 every single month. And that's exactly what they've been doing for their average customer. It's a simple no obligation call that can change everything. They have a team of salary-based mortgage consultants. So there's an incentive. There isn't any incentive to put you in a loan that doesn't make sense. It's just, again, something wealthy people do is a mindset of like, oh, let me see, does this work for me? I'm going to check it out and see if I can learn this. And they're not afraid to learn new financial tools and put them into place. But we're not taught that in American education. So you have to learn it yourself. You have to seek it out yourself. So call American Financing at 866-890-8434 or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/Redacted. One more time, it's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted, or give them a call at 866-890-8434. Okay, well, that's going to do it for us today on Redacted. Please remember to subscribe and hit that notification button so you know when we're live. And again, yes, we left you last week. We were off. We didn't do live shows, but we're back now. We will be back all week, and we will be back with it's big news. It's busy. There's a lot to talk about. Thankfully, the world did not blow up on our vacation, but we have a longstanding joke that big news breaks when we're gone. We were on break on October 7th when that happened. What are some of the other stories, David, that we've missed when we're on break? JFK files?
Oh my gosh, it kills me.
Yeah, go ahead.
We could fill the back of a whole t-shirt.
I know, of the things that, like, we should not take breaks, and it kills me to watch, and I try really to stay off X while I'm
on vacation. Well, it's funny, because, like, I'll see people commenting saying, uh-oh, Redacted's taking a break. Prepare for a shitstorm.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. Well, it wasn't too bad, right? We're all here. We all survived. So let's keep coming back. And I feel like maybe you could say us being here together is saving the world, right? So you have to come to Redacted. Is there any other way to see it, David?
Save Redacted, save the world.
Yeah, you gotta be here. I gotta be here. You gotta be here. I'll give you my vacation schedule in advance. Thanks again for being here, you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.